The recording has almost started. You can go ahead.
Thank you, Matthew.
You're welcome.
Swing us around.
Would you like me to do a roll call, Mike?
Oh, yeah, you can do that now.
We have on the call Mike O'Connor, the chair. Dave Piscatello. Christian Curtis. Wendy Seltzer, although her name is written Soldier. Margie Millam. James Bladell and Adam Palmer, and from staff we have Liz Gaster and Marika Koenig, and myself.
And you. I think Glenn gets the arriving close to the meeting in a panic award for the week. Ended at her house about 5 minutes before the call started. Pretty good. Okay, so I'm getting better at this, folks. So I have the agenda up on the website. You can take a look at. We've done the roll call. Thought we'd just take a look at this agenda. Then I've started a status reporting cycle. That was one of my. So we'll go through that really quick. We'll take a look at the action items from last time. There actually aren't any updates to the interim report, but I've got a document that I'm working on that we'll work on in lieu of that. Discussion topics. I kind of want to nail down the definition. Pick one. I want to sort of come back around to the data thing. That'll actually come up in the action items. This is a little out of order. I, too, arrived 5 minutes before the call started, so this isn't my best-crafted agenda of all time. The document I want to go through is the impact document. That's also a repeat. We can figure out any other topics we want to talk about, figure out next week, and I think that's okay.
If somebody could paste the URL into the chat, then it would be easily accessible.
Yeah. Come.
Thank you.
Welcome. That's a great idea. I'm learning more new toys. I tell you, this project has given me more gizmos to fiddle around with. This Adobe thing, I think, is really... Okay, so let me take the status report. All of this can also get to off of the FastFlux page itself. Our first status report is right there. Let me just step you through what this is all about. It's a really simple status reporting thing that I've been doing for, I don't know how long, but a really long time. And the first part here is if all of the answers to all six of these questions is no, then you as an executorial type can basically close your eyes on the rest of the status report, because it means that your leader is saying everything is fine, nothing is off track, take a nap. If, on the other hand, there's a yes, then down in the bottom area, issues and concerns, there's got to be a little documentation that says, what are you talking about? And we have two yeses, neither of which are earth-shattering, but worthy of note. The first is that the registry constituency requested a delay on getting the first round statements back, 5th to the 8th. So I'll post a note out to the whole list for everybody who's going back to constituencies that shift that date back. I don't think that's going to have impact on the overall schedule. It's just going to make Liz and me work a little bit harder, because I'm going to take the slack out of Liz and my budget. So Liz did that without asking your permission, but we're okay.
I noticed that. That's okay.
The other one, and this is one I want to talk about today, it came up on the last call, and when I listened to the call again, I highlighted it, and that is that Rod was lobbying for taking the word fast out of FastFlux, and on further further reflection, I sort of want to come back around and at least highlight that as what could be a huge scope increase, because without FAST in there, we start not having very many boundaries on what we are working on. So I just want to spend a minute on this call and sort of walk through that discussion again. Other than that, no news of excitement. Going along fine. I pasted our action items in to the accomplishments this week, and that concludes the status report. So I'm going to carry on, go right into those action items, sort of find out where we're at, because
so are you starting with the, you know, should it be fast or should it be, you know,
no, slow? I'm gonna start with these action items, and then we'll get to the scope thing in a minute. But I want to sort of take a snapshot on where the reach out for data effort is, especially the one to the anti-phishing working group. Did you get anything back yet on that?
Well, we've actually got three or four feeds of information. One from some one of the people who is works in the male anti-phishing working a group with the Internet Security Operations and Infrastructure Group, the ISOI. And we got some information back from April Lorenzen's list, and we got some from a university study, but it was a little old. So we actually have four or five offers for information, and they offer sort of different pictures and different different information that we still have to digest. So it's not like we can we know exactly what to say yet.
Okay.
Remember, most of this is not going to come in the form that that Rob had solicited. It's going to be largely raw data. So we're going to have to take the raw data. I mean, I literally have like a database of 14,000 phishing domains that I received. And illustrating, the one database that I have has 14,000 domains and the numbers of times that and the addresses that were used for that domain in a month. And the ranges were from like 1 or 2 to 1,700 in a month.
Okay.
So, we have to sort of figure out how we're going to kind of treat this in the aggregate, as we promised, and distill it into the kinds of numbers that that we want to present to the community. Then one question I guess I still have is, what is it that we want to present to the community? Just some statistics to corroborate the corroborate the claims, or and then identify in the month of for example, in the month of June 2008, there were 14,000 domains out of 14,000 domains that were identified as phishing domains. The median number of changes to an IP address was foo, and the maximum was bar, and the locus seems to have occurred around this number. I'm not quite certain what are the numbers that are that or what we want to use the numbers for yet.
I think there are a couple of uses. Clearly one is answering the question, is this a problem that needs solution just yet? Is it a problem that's rapidly growing but bears watching but isn't huge yet? I think there's sort of a scale kind of question. How pervasive is this? How rapidly is that increasing? And then there's the second part of what you were saying is the second part is completely obliterated by that cool sound. Just completely wiped out my train of thought. Think for a minute. We may have to sort of either arbitrarily or with information establish some sort of threshold that says this number of domain name changes in a month is what we're going to consider volatile. And, you know, so it would be helpful to have some information that sort of gives us a sense, because a lot of the descriptions, the TTL being 90 seconds, means that, you know, implicit in that is that that's a lot more than 1,000 domain or IP address changes in a month. Can't do the math right offhand, but that's more like 1,000 in a day. And so I think it's useful both in terms of scope and nature, these numbers, to give us a sense of what's going on. Now, we have another database from the, forgotten his name, the fellow that Joe put us in touch with that worked for a network security company, Atlas. I think there were 10 or 12,000 names on that list as well. Is that the list that you're talking about? Or do you have another list in addition to that?
Do you see where I got my list from? Pulling it up right now. Let's see.
I got one by email from... I will totally bewilder you if I go off and...
Many emails.
I think that the one I have doesn't have... One I've got is just domains and the date that they put it in their database. It too is about 10,000 names that they're monitoring. They're not calling them fast flux necessarily. They're just domains that they're watching, right?
Hello?
Go ahead.
It's Randy Vaughn. Sorry I joined you late.
Hey, Randy. They didn't announce you.
Yeah, that's all right. I came in late, so that was expected.
That's good. Actually, I kind of like it when they don't announce.
Yeah, me too.
You're pretty disruptive. Great to have you on board. We're actually talking about data.
Okay.
Now, and I've set Dave on a perhaps a fool's errand. Sorry about that, Dave.
That's okay. I mean, one of the sources that we had from the ABSC was from an IEEE paper that was written by Meenakshi Gupta at Indiana University.
Right.
And
Matt, I posted a link to that.
So that's up and available. I'm looking for the others now. Where did this come from?
Well, I don't want to tie everybody up with that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
so I have a better idea what you're looking for, and I think that Rob and Greg and and I, who are sort of trying to gather this information, have to decide how we're going to actually compose the kind of statements that you're looking for. So what you're telling me is that people still don't believe that this is a problem, and so that we have to present information to convince them that it is so.
I'm not sure that that's quite right. I think that, I'm still with my little risk manager hat on here and saying, look, there are a lot of problems out in the world, and if it happens a little bit, the odds are really small, especially if the fast subset is even smaller. And
well, I think that one of the problems here is that unless you explain the kind of metric, that signifies large or small, we have an issue. For example, if there are 200 million domains and 10,000 are being used in a month for phishing, is that a large number or a small number?
Well, it's certainly a small proportion.
Right, but if those 10,000 domains are costing $1 billion a month, is that a large number or a small number?
if we could come up with that number, the cost, I'd be just tickled to death.
So the reason why I'm doing this sort of Socratic dialectic is because the problem with trying to come up with numbers of that sort is that, by and large, financial institutions are not particularly willing to share how much they lose with researchers.
Right.
So coming up with the second number is much more difficult.
Yeah.
And the other is that if you go out of the raw financial loss into the reputational harm area,
right,
it's even harder because it becomes a very soft kind of numerical analysis.
I know, but I think that we still need to make the effort.
No, I'm not saying that we don't need to make the effort. I'm just asking you to tell me what the statistics or the metrics are that you want us to compare. Because if we don't have those, it's very difficult to try to make some analyses.
Am I still off mute here?
Say again?
This is Randy. I was asking if I was still off mute.
No, you're not off mute.
Okay. Well, after I get finished, tell me how to put this on because I can't mute my phone for some reason. Have we gotten in touch with Team Camry by any chance? I know that they've done some estimates of some past Luxnets, in particular the storm worm. And I seem to recall the word millions of hosts infected. The other estimates I've seen have been hundreds of thousands. As you know, that particular worm's had some real difficulties in size estimations. I do know that in July of last year, I found 16,000 rogue name servers on the Storm network, all in broadband connections.
Right.
And that was a huge number out of 100,000 storm worm potential IP addresses that I tested. I have 600 storm rogue name servers that I gathered in the last, until July 18th, I gathered them for about 2 weeks. I got 600.
See, I think all of that is useful. Right now, we're sort of in a vacuum, and it's really hard to know.
It's difficult.
Dave, I'm sort of giving you a bad answer because, in a way, not being much of an expert at this, I'm sort of in the "I'll know it when I see it" mode, and that's not a good answer for you. On the other hand, maybe there's somebody in the expert community who can help us categorize this threat across the spectrum of threats.
Well, here's another statistic, and tell me if this. One of the problems I have is that I'm not quite certain whether the community that we're going to actually talk to is going to understand some of the nomenclature. So, for example, I have one statistic here that says we discovered one host that actually resolves the IP addresses in 365 different ASNs, autonomous system numbers, which means that the reach of that particular Flux network is literally global, that there are bots or compromised computers that are part of this network in 365 routing domains. Routing domains meaning something operated by a public service provider or a backbone provider or an access provider or a network that's sufficiently large in an enterprise or institutional capacity to be assigned a what is called a BGP or a Border Gateway Protocol autonomous system number. So that's an astonishing footprint.
Right, but if it only happened once, it's partly how wide, but it's also how deep.
Well, it happened once this month.
Right, but even once this month doesn't get me real excited. Marcy's being real patient. Marcy, go ahead.
Sure. I know there's a lot of studies out there on how much losses are associated with phishing. I mean, Gartner and there's some of that information's already kind of out there in public. Is there a way to intelligently filter that data down from the experts? If the total phishing problem is, $3 billion in the U.S., what percentage of that is attributable to FastFlex? I guess that's a question to the audience, really.
Well, that's the kind of thing that I'm sort of groping for, is something other than, what we seem to have right now is a lot of sort of anecdotal evidence. And it makes me nervous to do policy on anecdotal evidence. I'd like something a little bit sturdier than that.
Well, especially with risk management, when you're looking at
I'm sorry. I'm going to try and grab control of this meeting. Wendy, go ahead.
So I want to get back to the definitions, though. I know much as we hate talking about the definitions, because to me, knowing how much loss is associated with fishing is almost entirely independent with what's the problem that we're at here.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's part of the reason that I'm dragging us back to definitions, because if we drop fast out of the definition, so that our, you know, I like Randy's stuff a lot, and if we took volatile out and just said it was compromised host networks, we suddenly have the whole fishing universe in front of us, which strikes me as a huge scope increase.
Well, why would we take volatile out?
Rod was talking about how last week on last week's call, how some of these networks behave exactly the same way, except they don't do it fast.
Right, but that's still volatile. It's not an inert network in the same sense as any enterprise network like a DuPont or a Fortune 1000 company's network or a network run at MIT or College of Charleston is a static, relatively static network. Got a, the notion of, of a volatile network in my mind is one where the host, the routing, the addressing, the name service are all, in a state of flux, so to speak. Whereas the notion of, an enterprise network strives to be exactly the opposite of that. You want stability in your name service. You want stability in your routes. You want stability in your availability. You want to know and enumerate every host and what activity is going on in those hosts. So I don't see that taking the word fast out of the equation immediately says we're talking about every fishing domain.
I think what we need, though, is the sword of Damocles that tells us what's in scope and what's out.
So can I offer a slightly different interpretation of taking the word fast out of flux?
Sure.
You can say that what it does is change the scope, or you can look at it and say that a year ago, our understanding and classification system was coarse because we didn't have the same degree of insight into the behavior of the networks that actually use a fluxing technique. Having a year's more experience with anti-crime, with anti-phishing, with other investigatory methods, with academic research, and intense data analysis, we understand more about the fact that these networks may have begun with fast flux begun with fluxing addresses quickly because that was convenient and it was opportunistic. But as countermeasures have improved, they have adapted to become more resilient against the possibility that someone has actually put in those countermeasures. And so by changing the behavior from fast to slow, or by changing the behavior from command and control center to distributed command and control center, or to adaptive instantiation of a control center when one is detected and taken out, what you're seeing is that there is an agility here. And by only looking at something that has short times to live as the single nail that we want to put in put in the coffin, we are probably narrowing the scope. And I think that was more a fact or an artifact of not understanding the problem as broadly as we do now a year ago.
Yeah, I can understand that. So where I'm still at is, I think we need to get to a definition, that we all, I think Randy took us a long way with his deconstruction of the thing. Is Randy's volatile compromised host network enough of a fingerprint to constitute the definition? Are people comfortable with that? Because if it is, maybe we could flesh that out a little bit with whatever the attributes of that are.
This is Randy. Is Eric on the line? Because I know he and I had a slight mail exchange where he may have had some alternative definitions.
Yeah, Eric's not on today.
Oh, that's a pity.
Yeah, it is a pity. I'm sorry. There was that, and that was a...
At the time, I seem to recall him talking about repurposed computers instead of compromised hosts. But I'm going to do him a disservice. Perhaps we can elicit some comments by email.
Yeah.
I think repurposed is a hugely broad categorization,
yeah.
And it is. I think it adds more ambiguity to the issue than clarity.
Okay. And one more point. Then I'm going to go on mute again. With the compromised host networks, we also are including servers where there's been some kind of server compromise,
mm-hmm.
and we'll see this through URLs that we're fairly easily adapted at working with. Typically, we're able to contact the owner of the network or the computer, and then they'll resolve the issue. Whereas FastFlux, it's a matter of being able to contact people, or actually not being able to contact people. We just cannot make notices to all the people who are infected just because it's just so huge.
Okay. Well, we need to work on this. Oh, I'm sort of a pain in the neck, but I really think we need a crystal clear definition of what we're... Because that will also, Dave, there's facts now.
I can't hear you. You're mumbling. Sorry.
I do that sometimes. That definition is also going to help with the fact gathering. Because then we'll be able to say, okay, we want to know about these critters, whatever they are. So can we take as a pretty high priority to really... Say again? Somebody want to jump in? That was a funny thing. Carrying on. Can we take as an action to really work on the definition next week? Because we got to get this straight, folks, or we're going to run everybody in circles. And
Mike, this is Rod. I've been listening for quite a while. I don't think you announced me either. Unfortunately, I'm mobile at the moment. I will shortly be my office. But let me try to interject something here if I can.
Go ahead.
I think the central problem we have, and Randy just touched on it, the central thing we're trying to look at least as far as back is initial discussions about putting together some sort of PDP on this, we're looking at the part of the ecosystem of the criminal enterprise here using domains that are registered and put on these networks, whether fast, slow, what have you, but where the only practical way of killing the network is to get the domain name removed by a domain registrar / registry. So there's a central nexus point where the only kind of real entity involved is a domain registration service provider of some sort, because they're moving them around automatically using the DNS system. And the in looking at definitions, if we can concentrate on that versus the situation, for example, where somebody registers a domain name and leaves it on the original hosting company or original registrar's services, those are easy to deal with. They're fairly straightforward to deal with. Or they have a domain that's been compromised because they've taken over a server. Those are straightforward to deal with. The problem we have with the FastFlux network is you cannot talk to a systems operator. You have to talk to literally millions of systems operators, and even then, if you get a hold of them, because it's fluxing quickly, they can't even see this, they've got a problem. So it all comes back to the domain registration provider who has a criminal who has registered a domain name through their service or is trying to register domain names through their service, looking at the preventative side. So I think that is really what we want to concentrate on, is that form, and whether it's fast, slow, automated, you know, usually it's automated in some fashion, or it's, you know, so fast, quickly done by humans that it may as well be automated. So I think that's really what we're trying to get after here, because that's where, you know, frankly, a PDP can apply, is if there's a domain registration entity involved in the process, that's where policy could actually make a difference. Otherwise, we're just looking at, you know, best practices and other things for ISPs. So if we're going to develop policy, we need to concentrate there, I think. That's what you said.
I think that's informative. I think we need, I still want to just beat the heck out of this over the next couple of days in email.
This is Adam Palmer. Could I jump in for a comment?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I can't get online, so I'm not able to indicate my hand up.
That's all right. For those of you who can't get online, just barge right in whenever I'm talking.
Well, apologize for my rudeness. I did have one comment though. I really wanted to say in response to what Rod said, was that, you know, I think there should be some clarity of staying focused. I do think when, you know, we can easily get far afield looking at the wider phishing problem, and it might be worthwhile to focus on why this is necessarily different than any other kind of abuse, such as, you know, spam or farming or malware, that takes advantage of the DNS. And I think that there should be some clarity. I guess I have some disagreement, at least to some extent, on the ability that Rod mentioned of, particularly at least with the registries, of our ability to affect any change here. And I think that it might be important. I think that it's something we'll try in our statement. I think our the registry constituency is trying to work on, making clear is, you know, to what extent that, in fact, a registry has any ability to affect change on this area, you know, whether it's appropriate to sort of suggest that they do when, in fact, they may not. So I really think we need some clarity on the effectiveness of that and whether or not that's an appropriate resolution. And I want to be mindful sort of the narrow scope of what I could or could not do through this process and you know, maybe approaching this certainly in a best practices mode rather than, stepping forward and saying this is, you know, really what this is what a registry can do, if in fact it can even do it, and this is what we're recommending. So, you know, just sort of being mindful of some of those points, I think, would be, prudent as we move forward.
Thanks, Adam. Let me extend that same invitation to anybody who's not on the Adobe thing. If while I'm talking, feel free to interrupt and get on the conversation. Adam, I think you're right. In a way, though, I want to make the distinction between the problem and proposed solution. In a way, what Rod did, which I think might have evoked your comment, is he narrowed the problem down to a point where there really was only one venue for proposed solutions. And I think that's an interesting conversation to have. I don't know that we can drive it all the way to ground on the call, but let's separate.
That was not my intent, Mike.
Okay, go ahead.
I was basically just...
Good job interrupting. I did see your hand up. But...
Yeah, well, no, my hand, this is Rod.
Yeah.
My hand better not be up.
You're trying to get in the room. I was sitting there.
No, that's me. I'm still in my car, so that's somebody trying to bend it to me. Yeah, that's really bad.
I didn't realize we had two rods. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. From the role that different entities can play, I'm not trying to define those. I'm just trying to actually narrow the scope of the problem statement into, these are the kinds of domains that are the issue here, not necessarily that this is the only way we can address. want to keep out the compromised servers that are being used directly and things like that, so we can actually concentrate on, you know, manipulation of the DNS in order to maintain a fraudulent site and not necessarily phishing. I don't think this is just this whole purpose of this was for phishing. I think we're looking at entire malicious use spectrum here and trying to get some sort of definition around it. But I certainly don't want to put words or solutions in place based on the problem definition. But really just trying to say, okay, we're using the DNS in this way to keep these things live, and you know, the real world touch points are usually domain registration of some sort.
I'm delighted that we record these calls because I don't have to take notes. I can go back through the call later and sort of extract tidbits. Is there anybody who wants to get an idea into this conversation so that when I listen to this again, I'll extract it and put it in the... If you do, this is a good time to inject it. And what I'll do is I'll take an action to go through this part of the call very carefully, try and meticulously pull out the concepts that we've put forward, build a straw man definition, get it out on the website for people to...
Mike, it's Adam. Just to clarify, I guess, then my comment, I just wanted to suggest that we, you know, I think it's very important when we're focusing on the problem and not to necessarily prescribe solutions or suggest that we have or this group, you know, it's appropriate for this group to propose or examine potential solutions and not to get out of scope into a wider forms of abuse. I guess my suggestion, and others, you know, may disagree, is at least that this is a focus on FastFlux, and that looking at that problem and not to prescribe any wider solution or policy suggestion would be, I think, be far beyond the scope of what we're being tasked to do.
Would you take Rod's narrowing to the DNS,
huh?
both sides of the DNS?
With it, downloadable file.
Oh, that's our operator. Hey, Matthew. There we go. I think Matthew forgot to mute. Would you take Rod's notion that we kind of zero in on the DNS side of things, not necessarily just TTL, but the whole domain ecology as our focus? Would you take that as a friendly amendment to your...
I would say, actually, it's probably, I don't know if any of my colleagues who are a little more, who have a sharper technical understanding of the problem than I do, might be better to comment, quite honestly, on, you know, that focus. But, you know, I have no problem, at least, with a general best practices sort of approach, even if we want to sort of go that far for mitigating this. You know, again, I just want to not get into the point where we're sort of defining these are the solutions and making, you know, recommendations for that.
Yeah. I'm going to be very careful not to imply solutions when I extract. I may pull those out and put them in another pile that we can consider later. But I will try not to get solutions defined in the definition for sure.
Okay. I want to, you know, I'm not trying to bring this call to a halt, so I'll I think I've made my point. I appreciate allowing me to say it.
So, who's M. Perkel? Mark.
Yeah, hi, this is Mark. I guess I'm a little bit confused. I guess you're talking about not defining, you know, coming up with solutions as part of the definition of the problem. Is that correct? Is it?
Exactly.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. So there is going to be, you know, a solution phase to this, you know, thing, because I guess I tend to focus more on figuring out solutions and some of the things that I don't yet know, which in the realm of possible solutions is the ultimate. What is it that can be done? You know, is it ultimately that if we detect a criminal enterprise using a fake domain, that registrars would disable the domain? Is that part of what we're assuming, or I guess we're also assuming that we can have some type of management over the rate that DNS can be allowed to change. You know, we could also perhaps, you know, just recommend, providing, information about domains through, DNS. I mean, I guess I don't completely understand the scope of what the possibilities that of things that can be done. And maybe I'm premature on this question, but, to figure out what tools we have to work with, that's within the scope of what this, this group and ICANN can do.
Right. I'm gonna sort of cut you off, being the rude guy that I am, and say that I don't want to stop the conversation about solutions, but I don't want to have it now, because until we know what problem we're trying to solve, we could invent solutions to the wrong problem. So I'm really interested in nailing the problem statement. And then once we've got that crystal clear, several good things happen. One is we can zero in on solutions that solve that problem. And the other is that the thing that triggered all this is that then we can go out and capture data that helps us support our conclusions, which is, especially Dave, Greg, Rod are out trying to pull together some data that we can use to justify things. And
Mike, this is Randy.
Go ahead.
Just a short comment. I really would like it if people would try to tear apart those definitions, because I have questions about some of the wording and some of the implications.
Yeah.
So please feel free to destroy them.
Yeah. The same goes for anything that I write.
Yeah.
But right, I think that what I want to instill right now is sort of a spirit of puzzle solving. I don't want to make it seem like this is negative or bad. I think this is really important and hopefully kind of fun as we figure out exactly what it is that we're going to try and solve before we get too far down the road on the solution side. So I'm with Randy. Let's engage in a spirited conversation. I will summarize this part of the call into something. I'll get it out as quick as I can, although I'm meeting and traveling all day today, so maybe pretty late tonight before I get it done. I'm feeling a pretty high level of urgency to get this nailed so that we can sort of hang on to our schedule. We may have this major schedule blowout if we can't get to the end of this pretty soon. So, anything else that people want to inject into the problem definition conversation before we move on? Okay. Christian, go ahead.
I just wanted to mention that in defining the scope of the problem, it might be worthwhile to look at the scope of the problem that, or the scope of the problem that it is within ICANN's ability to address, or for which it is appropriate for ICANN to address, versus, generally malicious practices on the whole. Because I don't want to take a definition of the problem that's going to give the impression that we're going to be able to completely stamp out all malicious practices on the Internet.
Yeah, that would certainly make us heroes if we were able to do that. Is that a friendly amendment for folks? I tend to agree, and I think that in that case, a little bit of conversation right now about what those limits are would be helpful to your summarizer. Somebody want to take a stab at that?
Well, if we're going to talk about what ICANN can and cannot do, then
right.
it falls squarely in the realm of the operation of the domain name system and registration services. It doesn't involve routing. It doesn't involve endpoint security. It doesn't involve, in part, ISPs unless they, they are, accredited registrars. So you narrow the scope fairly considerably when you make that statement, and I think that that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I do too. Does anybody want to expand, clarify, refine Dave's boundaries of ICANN impact? sounds like you got it in one, Dave. Okay, I'll put that in as not as part of the definition, but maybe as a related definition. I don't know. I'll figure out something and we can beat it up in the email. That was a good thing, folks.
Right. It's Adam again. I appreciated Dave's summary, and I think it's, you know, again, worth making a point of that, you know, ICANN would seem, you know, not especially well equipped or appropriate to necessarily, you know, prescribe any type of solution to some of these issues. You know, and I think there's a good question of why, you know, I know at least even before this group was formed, as to from the, at least the registry constituency, as to why we were necessarily even treating it differently and not having a similar groups for all the other variety of problems that are similarly related. So, you know, I think looking at the scope and understanding the scope of the whole policy process is something that we should be mindful of throughout this process.
You know, one of the things that I'd like to interject here is that there tends to be very much of a defensive reaction to, you know, to something like a PDP, where the expectation, that's a better word, is that there will be a policy that actually either imposes something or constrains action. And one of the things I'd like to have people think about is that in some ways policies can introduce more liberal treatment and more liberal practice by, by a registry or registrar. And one of the things that, you know, we talked about early on in this whole process was, are there practices that we can recommend that may work for fast flux, but also have a general applicability in terms of some way to quickly diagnose and act independently as a registry, and take down a site or take or suspend a registrar or act without some expectation of some penalty or some loss as a result of a contractual breach. So I really do think that we don't want to necessarily think that anything that comes out of this committee has to be, clause 12 of the registry agreement with ICANN says you must monitor TTLs and they can't be more than 3 minutes. Now, I don't expect anything like that in a PDP, or in a response that we would generate, and I really wouldn't expect anything that granular in a policy between ICANN and a registry.
I think you're both right. Rod, and then Christian. Well, Christian, are you responding to Dave?
Yes.
Sorry, wait a minute. I'm gonna figure this out yet. Rod first. Then
I'm just trying to get in the meeting.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Dang, damn it. I wish my eyesight was better. My apologies. Rod, go ahead.
Well, actually, I wasn't raising my hand. But if you can give me the floor for a second.
Totally lost control.
Nice move.
Yeah, the one thing, too, that policy may not be something action you have to take, but perhaps data provided, right? Because one of the things that we're starving for here is data. And if we are to track a problem, one of the things that perhaps a registry could provide would be data or a registrar. So that wouldn't necessarily be something that was all that onerous either. So that's another thing to think about as we're doing this stuff.
Good point.
I think that I'm gonna snip this particular part of the conversation off just because we are getting a bit ahead of ourselves. I think, Adam, your concern is well noted, and I will acknowledge it in a minute. But I don't want to get us into policy solutions just yet, because I want to make sure that we get our problem statement right first. I'm going to push us along. We're getting up towards the top of the hour, and I'm sensitive to time. The next action item was to go out to legitimate users, and I succeeded at getting through to a couple. I got through to the C-level people who run Thompson West, the CTO, the CSIO, or CISO, or whatever it is. Anyway, and also got to the CTO of a company that runs a very big network, but it's a little company. And in both cases, they got pretty excited about and were pretty negative about the idea of limiting TTLs on hosts. They were less excited about the notion of limiting it on the DNS side. But in the case of Thompson West Publishing, they set the TTL on all of their hosts to 30 seconds. And so short TTLs is something that at least Thompson feels they need. And my buddy Ralph, who runs this other one, agreed that for him to be able to shed load, he needs short TTLs on there. He will sometimes go several days without having to do it, but when he is experiencing a lot of load on his network, he really needs short TTLs right now. So I'll write that up. I just wanted to inject that into the conversation real quick and see if anybody else succeeded at getting out to any legitimate users and had any observations like that. Wendy, did you have any luck getting to any of the folks in the community that you're trying to reach?
I apologize. I'm going to have to leave in a moment. And still not much definite, although I did get a few bursts of laughter when I... Well, there's a group planning to address some problems by limiting TTLs. The bursts of laughter were, ha! Good luck breaking every content distribution network out there.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think especially on the host side, the two content distribution folks that I talked to got pretty cranky about the idea of limiting TTL on the host side, especially given the patents that Akamai's got, which...
How did you ask the question? Can I interject? How did you ask the question? If you ask the question, I mean, you can beg an answer by saying, suppose we unilaterally refuse to allow TTLs in the global internet for even less than an hour. Okay.
Right.
I can imagine almost everyone who runs a legitimate name service would find some reason to object to that.
Right.
If you ask it in the context of some of the things that Steve Crocker had mentioned, where you say, suppose what we had was a method where, a legitimate use of a short TTL would simply require a request or to be provided on a white identified on a whitelist. Would you mind going through the extra steps so that you can help us eliminate 7 million rogue DNS servers that are running short TTLs? You would get a different answer.
Well, I actually asked the question almost exactly that way, except for the last sentence. And the concern that came back is, these guys are infrastructure nutcases, as you might expect, and they don't like to inject any more points of failure into their process than they can. So their concern is that the whitelist token, Steve Crocker and logic kind of thing would inject another point of failure for them. And so they were not enthused about it, a solution like that. Because I did, in fact, not just throw out the notion that we would arbitrarily limit short TTLs, because I knew that would get that response. But there is a lot of concern about points of failure there that we'd have to address before they would get very comfortable, I think. Christian's next. Go ahead, Christian.
I apologize. Talk to you later.
Hey, Wendy. Thanks for staying as long as you could.
To some degree, we can address this when we start talking about solutions, but it seems to me that our concern as far as who might be impaired if we were to require whitelists or some request permission for a short TTL might cause problems for new technologies and new uses and create problems down the line beyond just those that might exist for people already employing the technology.
Yeah, that's actually my buddy Ralph is one of those guys. He works for a company called Swarmcast, which is doing some pretty interesting stuff with distributed content distribution, and you know, he would fall squarely in that new technology category. I'm going to push this along. I want to remind everybody that we should be out to our constituencies, getting those constituency inputs, and remind folks that this cycle is not as formal as a real formal constituency statement. So, you know, this is really still at the brainstorming input ideas stage rather than reacting from a policy standpoint. But a reminder that we should be well along in that process now and getting them in. Go ahead.
It's Rodney Jaffe, so the other Rodney.
The other Rodney.
I've been very quiet and just been lurking. But there's one thing I wanted to volunteer, you know, that I hadn't thought about originally, is obviously most people see us as a registry operator at Neustar. But we actually have a managed DNS business where we're probably the 800-pound gorilla in terms of DNS as a service. So I've got a very large data set of real data in terms of PTLs for DNS records. I'm authoritative for places like, you know, Amazon and Harley Davidson and Staples and Office Depot and you know, about 8,000 major internet organizations. I could probably run some analysis and tell you actually what the average and median and mean TTLs are for probably 30 or 40% of the e-commerce world.
Ooh,
if
cool.
That's useful.
Hey, Rodney, this is
yeah.
Dave. Could you identify specific loci of the data? So, for example, you know, I mean, if you come up with a median, that's fine, but it would be nice to understand if you have like a scatter plot with a distribution that sort of shows that, you know, there's a large concentration of people who tend to use TTLs around the 30-minute side. There's a large concentration of people who have TTLs that are measured in, you know, 3 days. There is very, and I think that would be actually kind of helpful in sort of trying to understand where the outliers are.
Sure. In fact, given 3 or 4 days, what I could probably also tell you, because remember that there's a difference between Joe's Sushi and Bait Shop with a 30-second TTL and Amazon or MySpace with a 30-second TTL, so I can probably also relate it to the number of queries that particular record gets.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that will be interesting
cool.
stuff too. Thank you for offering to do that, because that, I know that's a fair bit of work.
I'll start that today, and I'll probably have something for you guys by Monday or Tuesday.
Wonderful. Now, that's on the DNS server side or also the host side?
This is, so we're authoritative, for example, for MySpace. So we provide all the DNS, not just from the TLD point of view, but from the second level downwards. So I have the records for every one of the publicly facing MySpace devices or the Amazon machines or for parts of Amazon for every one of their host records that is actually publicly facing.
Wow, that's wonderful.
So
can you also extract on the DNS side the TTLs on their DNS servers?
Well, I am their DNS servers.
So we know that. Wow, very cool. Okay. Because one of the things that everybody that I talked to said is that they didn't care at all about DNS TTL.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have a reasonably large business that says that people do. And
oh, really?
One of the big things is the TTL. We have some people who have a 0-second TTL.
On their DNS servers or on their hosts?
On the hosts. On the DNS, it doesn't make a difference because they become a customer of ours.
Right. That's what the folks at Thompson were saying, is that they were a lot more comfortable with the idea of the Krakarian logic applied to the DNS servers. TTL.
Which is fine, because that falls into the taxonomy that we just established in terms of where, you know, where our scope ends. We're not really talking about you know, A record or TTL for A records for hosts. We're talking about TTL for, you know, for name servers.
Right.
And from an industry point of view, I don't know that we ever get anyone saying to us, and we're authoritative, obviously, some very big companies, no one ever says to us, you know, we want to have a short TTL on the main server.
Right. That's the sort of emerging consensus that I'm hearing, too.
Well, that would be a very valuable data point and conclusion from this committee, because it actually gives us some very interesting insights into how to monitor behavior.
Yeah. What I also probably look at is, if I look at the order trail, I could see how often companies at the second level want to change their name servers.
Ooh, that's another good one.
Because remember that, you know, while the TLD may actually only have four name servers identified, in some cases, you know, we end up answering in the additional section with another four or five name servers that are configured by the customer. I can have a look at how often that happens and how often it changes. So it's one of those DNS tricks where when someone configures a domain or registers a new domain in, let's say, .com, and it comes over to us, in .com itself, there may only be two name servers or four name servers, TLD, you know, PDNS 1 through 4, .ultraDNS.net. But in our system, they can configure additional name servers that get returned. I can have a look at what the, how many of those we have and how often they get changed.
That's wonderful. Rodney, this is Randy. Can you also do CNAMEs?
Yes.
That would be good.
In fact, as a group, because people are thinking about stuff now, if you, over the next few hours, can tell me what you'd like us to look at, knowing the kind of data we've got, I'll run a project over this weekend with my guys and come back early next week with some hard data.
Very cool. Rod, you get the Hero of the Call award.
Well, not yet, but...
Yeah, but I think this is, you know, this is going to be very helpful. I think both narrowing down the definition a bit, as we did in the early part of the call, and then this data to give us some insights moves us forward a lot. So, many thanks. I just gave you an action. Let no good deed go unpunished. That's my motto.
No, that's no problem. I'm happy to do this, because this research is really interesting. It's something that we've never looked at, and I know that because of the way our system works, there are many people that add name servers to the records they have configured in our system for them. And I know that in many cases, those name servers have much shorter TTLs than the name servers that the registry itself allows.
Huh. Even the name servers, not just the hosts.
No, the name servers.
Huh.
So you can create in our system... you can create additional NS records.
Right. Cool. Okay. For the rest of the folks on the call, you heard him. Get your notes to him within the next few hours so that your questions can get folded into his analysis. And I think the more clearly we can frame those questions, the better. So take some time after the call, formulate questions that would be just extremely useful for you, and get them to Rod. Okay. See, what do I want to do now? We've got about 20 minutes, and I'm not sure that I really want to drag us through the document that I created, because our changed enough that we would be constantly course correcting just to accommodate the new definition. So I think I may sort of get us to... I'm tempted to end the call at this point and let us go off and work on those two things rather than beat up the document that I prepared, because it needs substantial revision now. Is there anything else that would be useful to people while we're on the call to talk about? Otherwise, I may just build up a little more credit in the minutes bank and wrap us up a little early. Again, I have a huge document, but I think it's a waste of our time to review it at this stage. Just want to, so that takes care of that one. I have a sense of the plan for the week, which I'll get out in a minute. So I'm feeling close to done, unless there's other business. And any feedback for me, of course, always at the end.
Well, you've done a good job as usual. I'll give you that for some feedback.
Thank you, sir. I think we all are doing really well on these calls. I just want to give us all an attaboy because I know that these are hard. I know that there is this sort of, ICANN is an organization that's in a state of dynamic tension, and I think we're doing pretty well at being open and taking some risks, and I commend you for that. So, way to go. Let's keep going. And we'll get together next week. I'll get some minutes out. I'll get a definition draft out, probably both pretty late tonight. Get your questions to Rod, and carry on. And thank you. That's it for me. See ya.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye, Glenn.
Mike?
Bye, Mike. Thanks.
Hi, thanks.
Mike, you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Greg Aaron. How are you?
Greg, you made it. Just at the end.
I've been on for a few. Okay. We changed meeting times.
Oh, we didn't, did we?
No.
You just sent the same dang email out again. It's just.
I think I am so turned around. I don't even know what's going on anymore.
Yeah, it's the dang time zone changes. Sorry about that. But
right. Never mind. Yeah. Anyway, I was on.
Oh, good. Well, I commend the earlier part of the MP3 to you. There was a part of the call where we were going, "Dang, where's Greg?" So, the two parts of the call. Paul really broke down into a pretty extended discussion of the definition question again, because we're still pecking away at that. And, I would really appreciate you going through the first part of the call and listening to that.
Okay.
And getting me any thoughts via email would be fantastic. I took an action item to go and listen to that part of the call and summarize it, and I'll do that tonight.
Okay.
So if you want, you can just hang back and then respond to the summary. But if there's anything that you want to inject before that, by all means.
Okay. I'm thinking it'd be better for me to react to something that's on paper.
Yeah, that's fine.
Electronic facsimile thereof.
Yeah. And then the second half was really the data conversation that you heard the tail end of, especially with Rod.
Right. Rodney was talking about the TTLs that he
sees in his
manages as a DNS and hosting provider.
Right. And
it's important probably for I'm assuming everybody on the call understood the difference between what he does in a TLD zone versus what he does as a DNS provider.
Yeah, we've probed that a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
And because you didn't hear that probing, that gives me a sense of when you came in on the call. And there's one other thing that
I missed that bit, yeah.
That came up, and that was that I went out to a few content providers, Thomson Reuters and a much smaller one called Swarmcast, who actually uses a lot more bandwidth than they do. And they got pretty cranky about the idea of short TTLs on hosts. They were less cranky about short TTLs on DNS servers. And the reason they were cranky about the short TTLs, I proposed it in the Kraterian framework, which was you could be whitelisted and get permission and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And their concern is that that's an introduction of another point of failure. And they're very tender on points of failure. They really don't like those at all.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
It was pretty, and the same reaction from the small content provider. His problem is that there are a lot of other things that he can do besides short TTLs, but because of the Akamai patent, if he does them, pretty soon lawyers from Akamai show up.
probably try to figure out as registries is clearly outlined for everybody what a registry can do and may not be able to technically do regarding these kinds of issues.
Yeah, I think Adam did a pretty good job of raising that point during the definition conversation.
We're working on that technical issue within the registry constituency, running it past, you know, technical folks and stuff.
Cool.
Because what you do at a registry is you put a zone file out there.
Right.
And it can contain a default TTL. And most registries, you know, it's a long one.
Yeah.
It's long, you know, a day or something.
Yeah, right.
But then registrars don't populate shorter TTLs into that or anything like that.
They don't?
Nope. Not in the registries I'm aware of. So what we may see is at least in like EPP, for example,
yeah,
which is the protocol used in a lot of major registries.
Right.
There is no means to do that even.
Can they do it at the registrar? I suppose they could do it. The registrars could do it on their own domain servers, but that's not
if they're acting as hosting providers.
Right. Yeah.
Right? But at the registry level, there may be limitations on what you can do, because basically, whoever is authoritative for a domain name is the one who has control over the TTL.
Right.
So, you know.
Yep.
Well, what we're trying to do is we're trying to frame that. We're trying to write that in a technically accurate fashion, and that'll be probably be part of our contribution. And that's one of the reasons why we're running it past our constituency. We're going to have our next meeting, and that's why Adam had asked for the extension.
Yeah.
Because we want to have that kind of stuff go through the technical folks, make sure we're trying to write it in an accurate fashion, and also with an appropriate amount of detail, but also for the general audience.
Yes, like me. Think you're writing to me, the business puke, not the technical folks who are.
Yeah, so we have to find a fine line where we can do the popularization.
All right, perfect. Well, that's great.
Also make sure, I mean, and again, different registries are doing things different ways, probably, so.
Yeah.
We'll see what we get.
Okay.
It's good that Rodney was on the call, because then he can talk about his registry.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll see what VeriSign. I don't know if VeriSign does anything different. .com and .net probably have a lot of old cruft in them.
That's right.
So we'll see.
Yeah. Cool. Well, neat. Glad you made it a little bit. Sorry.
I do. Yeah.
I got scooped up.
My schedule is crazy.
In for us all. Well, I'll give you...
Hey, put me in the minutes as having been in...
Well, you're being recorded. You'll be in the transcript for sure.
Okay, cool.
Oh, yes, and you are down in the... on the prison.
Ah, okay.
List.
All right. Well, for whatever little it was worth.
It's always great to hear from you, Greg.
Okay.
So we'll see you in a week.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye. Okay. Well, thanks, Lynn. I think we made it.
Thanks, Mike. I think that was excellent. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. You really do get two things. And what an enthusiastic bunch.
Yeah, I think this is a really terrific game.
Oh, yes, yes.
Great.
And funnily enough, those people who don't belong to a constituency are very regular.
Yeah.